Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is House Ag Committee Ranking Member Glenn Thompson, who joined us to offer his thoughts on the upcoming Farm Bill and other congressional issues. But first, here's this week's headlines. Inflation made news again this week as the latest Consumer Price Index offered a fresh round of data. We'll have more specifics later in the program, but the price relief consumers were hoping to see at the grocery store hasn't happened. Republicans seized on the figures as a demonstration of the economic woes they say are caused by the Biden administration. For his part, President Joe Biden said the administration needs to make more progress more quickly in getting price increases under control. In other news, the Department of Agriculture took steps this week to allow hundreds of additional counties to ensure double-cropped acreage this winter. The move is aimed at addressing global wheat shortfalls and allow producers to follow a winter wheat crop with soybeans or sorghum in the next year. The Department of Agriculture says the week's action expanded double-cropping insurance capabilities in nearly 1,500 acres where the practice is viable. All told, some form of double cropping is now authorized in more than 30 states. And finally, farm groups were in Washington this week to meet with lawmakers and refine their own Farm Bill priorities. The National Corn Growers Association and American Soybean Association both had members walking the halls of Capitol Hill this week as lawmakers worked their way through the oversight process of the 2018 Farm Bill. One such lawmaker is Pennsylvania Republican Glenn Thompson, who is poised to chair the House Ag Committee if the GOP is successful in its effort to claim the House majority in the midterm elections. He and many other lawmakers have a long list of priorities for the upcoming bill, including the Republican Study Committee, which proposed big cuts to farm programs this week. When we spoke to Thompson, we asked him how he plans to sell the prospect of additional spending to his conservative colleagues.
Well, first of all, where we will determine we need to do additional investments, because that's what it is, right? It's an investment in the industry that puts food on the plate, literally grows, raises for every American family, and it's the backbone of the rural economy. And if you harm programs, any of the programs in the Farm Bill, you will crush the rural economy, which will crush our national economy. So how do I do that? It's retail politics. It's one person at a time. You know, there's one of the truisms around this Capitol Hill, I think in life in general, is you don't know what you don't know. So my goal is to help them learn more about how misguided these policies are. Now, I have to say the Republican Study Committee budget, and that's the one you're talking about, is, I mean, it's never been implemented, right? The extreme left and someone on the right, they introduce these budgets and they never get approved. But that said, it shows me it was a good measure that there are a handful of members out there, and I've already started the process of reaching out so I can sit down with them and talk about these programs. Most of them are public-private partnerships. And the return on investment, and I know these folks, they do not want to crush the rural economy. They do not want to harm what I believe is America's number one industry, where that provides for the food and the fiber and the energy resources and the building materials. So I take that as an opportunity and a challenge to help them better understand.
Mm-hmm. So looking at some of the things that farm groups are potentially going to be asking for, some already are asking for an increase in reference prices through commodity programs. Are you going to need to increase those reference prices to account for higher input costs as you look to write this next farm bill?
Well, it kind of falls under, we don't know what we don't know. I mean, we're just now, thankfully, in the past month, picked up the intensity of doing hearings. We really haven't initiated, I'm frustrated by this, the formal listening sessions around the country. When it comes to Title I and reference prices, that is something we need to talk about. We have most commodities, not all. I think rice is struggling, and maybe others, they're struggling in their prices that they're getting right now, but every commodity is struggling with input costs. And so the question is reference prices actually a good way to continue with when it's the margin that matters? Agriculture, farming's a business. And at the end of the day, what is the margin you're left with after you pay these exorbitant input costs, and that's not slowing. I mean, just yesterday, the CPI, Consumer Price Index, went to 9.1%, which was better than double digits, which I was expecting, but it still means that it's going to continue to drive up the cost of fertilizer and fuel. A lot of things are self-inflicted with just bad policy decisions by this administration. So I think the bigger question, the first step is we need to hear more from the folks who are being impacted. And I appreciate that. We've had the corn growers and the soybean folks in town. It's nice to have them back in Washington. They're here this week. But we need to continue those conversations. And then the discussion is, should we be looking more to a margin type instrument versus a reference price, which is really meaningless if you have this super high inflation? Because unfortunately, I don't see signs of that slowing.
We'll be right back to discuss the Farm Bill budget and the nutrition title with Ranking Member Glenn Thompson right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahe build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Welcome back. Many in farm policy are beginning to wonder if the next farm bill can check all of its necessary boxes without an influx of new money. When we spoke to Congressman Thompson, we asked him how he'll approach the baseline issue in the upcoming farm bill.
We don't know yet. And that's why we need to do these sessions. We need to do the listening sessions. We need to look. I know there's folks that are out there that are, in fact, some staffers I've heard been reported on the Hill saying that, you know, talking about the need for more money, and that may be, but we really have to determine that first. I'm not a person who will draw the conclusion first and then go out and look and see how we build the solution. I think we need to obviously, we need to, and I'm not looking to limit what we're doing. We really ought to do a thorough and a full assessment of what the status of American agriculture is. I come out of healthcare, so I would never have gone to a patient and set a treatment plan before I assess them, right? And we need to do a good, thorough assessment and analysis of the state of American agriculture, and then we'll build a farm bill to meet that need. And then we need to look at the financing. The financing is the last part of that. We shouldn't be limiting ourselves initially limiting ourselves from looking at the facts and the real status of American agriculture by saying, setting some type of pre-drawn conclusion.
Mm-hmm. But one thing that we already know is the nutrition program, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, and other programs in that title has grown quite a bit in since the COVID-19 pandemic, since the rewrite of the Thrifty Food Plan, et cetera. As you look at the amount of dollars that you have available to you, how do you plan to address the nutrition title? Is cutting benefits on the table?
Well, that title four is very near and dear to me. I was I chaired the nutrition subcommittee during the 2018 Farm Bill. And you're right, with what Secretary Vilsack did entirely on his own authority, and not a real transparent way. I mean, he added an additional $250 billion to the nutrition title. So we're over 10 years now, we're at $1.1 trillion over 10 years, just on Title IV. It is an important title to me. I believe that it's kind of a rural value, right? Where neighbors take care of neighbors in need. There's a lot to that title, and we'll be working on it. I'm looking forward to working in a bipartisan way to set, as I want to do with process-wise, with all titles in the Farm Bill, where we define and get a consensus on principles, on what should guide us. When it comes to the nutrition title, part of that, I believe, should be, obviously, we help neighbors in need. Most people are in financial distress temporarily. That tends to be the folks that are on the SNAP program, Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program. Long time ago, they called it food stamps. We don't do that anymore. But we also need to be looking. We also, part of that program are educational programs that we help people climb the ladder of opportunity, climb their way out of poverty or financial distress. The goal is to get them, since so they're temporarily, most of them, let's speed up how the pathway to success. And we have the tools to do that. I think we could probably make some refinements. I would hope refinements that we could get all Republicans and Democrats to agree to, because the goal should be, you know, for those American neighbors that we have in difficult financial situations, we need to help them with nutritional support. But more than that, we need to help them move towards finding a really good paying job so that they can realize the American dream of opportunity, because that comes through the dignity of work.
Mm-hmm. One of the things you said there was that Secretary Vilsack was acting on his own authority with some of the expansion of these programs, but one of the things that he did was rewrite the Thrifty Food Plan, which was called for in the 2018 Farm Bill, as you know, is calling for another rewrite of that benefit package, which is, you know, sets the benefits for SNAP. Is that on the table for you?
Well, we, you know, that actually, that was directed to have that study done, the 2018 Farm Bill. I'm not complaining about that, because I was nutrition chair at the time, but I would expect that it would be done in a transparent way. You know, one of the things that has frustrated me, and I like working with Secretary Vilsack. I did it for 8 years under President Obama's administration, and I was a huge fan of what the secretary did with the Dairy Export Council, obviously, for 4 years. But I dislike the fact, actually I hate the fact, that to find out what USDA is doing, I have to hear it on social media or on cable news, or in from great reporters like yourself and your programs. And I don't think that's the way it's supposed to work. I don't think it works best that way. Agriculture has always been bipartisan, and that's both being between parties in the committee, but it's also been between the legislative branch and the executive branch. And there was no insight. It was a phone call to say tomorrow morning we're going to announce that we're adding $250 billion, taking the Title IV to over $1.1 trillion. Those kinds of actions that are happening in a vacuum are concerning, and I don't think it makes for the best policy too. We've got passionate people on the Agriculture Committee, both Democrats and Republicans. And we expect the legislative branch, especially in agriculture and all things rural America, to be working with us.
Congressman, thanks for joining us.
Okay, thanks, Spencer. Thank you so much. Appreciate the opportunity.
We'll be right back for a discussion with this week's panel. But first, our Hannah Pagel takes a look at the Consumer Price Index in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
Inflation continues to impact consumers as the price for groceries and other cost of living is up 9.1% over the last 12 months. That's according to the latest Consumer Price Index released on Wednesday. U.S. supermarket prices jumped 1% in June, which was led by continued increases in the cost of dairy, which saw a 1.7% increase, bakery products, which are up 1.8%, as well as fats and oil, which jumped 2.6%. Specifically, butter prices saw a 4.8% increase last month, while the cost of margarine jumped 6.8%. Overall, grocery prices have risen 12.2% over the past year, despite a decrease in meat prices. Energy prices also jumped 7.5% in June, which accounts for half of the overall increase in the CPI. In recent days, you may have noticed gasoline prices have softened somewhat. However, the CPI showed prices increased over 11% in June. In a statement, President Joe Biden says the June CPI was unacceptably high, but also out of date. He said the report's data does not reflect the full impact of nearly 30 days of decreases in gas prices, which have dropped about 40 cents since mid-June. For this week's Ag by the Numbers, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together, we celebrate together, but we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. Looking forward to continuing our discussion on the Farm Bill this week with an expert panel on the subject. Joined this week by Jonathan Kappas with the University of Illinois, Lisa Van Dorn with the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives, and Ryan Yates with the American Farm Bureau Federation. Appreciate all of you taking the time to join us. And Jonathan, I want to go to you first because right now a lot of the debate that we're seeing, a lot of the conversation is about that pot of Farm Bill money that's going to be available to lawmakers as they go to write this next bill. And you're one of those folks that's probably forgotten more about Farm Bill math than many people, myself included, will ever learn. But I'm wondering if you could just kind of, you know, strip this down to the studs for us. Why are we seeing such a push for new money with this particular bill?
Well, we've seen this really complicate quite a few farm bills in recent times, and it's really built around this budget discipline set of rules and procedures that limit to what we call the baseline, which is what the Congressional Budget Office estimates these programs will spend over 10 years. So without new money, you're kind of caught within that estimation of spending. And under budget rules, if you're going to increase spending on any one program or title, you got to cut somewhere else. And so that creates this incredibly difficult political environment.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Lisa, one of the things that we're seeing farm groups ask for at this point is a increase to some of the reference prices that are used in those risk management programs for producers, folks looking to bolster that support program. But right now, we're seeing an environment where commodity prices are pretty high. They have softened a little bit recently, but they're still at pretty solid levels. In your estimation, how does the ag lobby, the ag community, go about selling the need for those higher reference prices at a time when commodity prices are fairly solid?
That's a great question. And, you know, NCFC just concluded its Farm Bill framework. We released it this week. And paramount to that framework was making sure we had adequate resources, not only for the commodity titles, but for challenges like climate change, USDA staffing resources. So, you know, there's a number of issues out there that do require more resources. Specific to reference prices, you know, we're seeing, especially with some of our rice industry partners, huge input costs that far exceed what they're able to get from the marketplace or support from the farm safety net. So that's really going to be an issue that we're going to focus on and try to make sure that Congress understands the implications.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Ryan, we talk a little bit during this panel about the political issues, that some of the problems of trying to generate that new money, and we could talk for hours about how Congress might go about accomplishing that. But in the event that they are unable to do so, looking at commodity programs that are looking for increased support, the nutrition title is swelling, as well as the rewrite of the Thrifty Food Plan driving up some costs there, can this bill be written to support producers and the needy without an influx of additional new money?
Well, I think we still have a little bit of time to figure that out. And I think, you know, as we move through the remainder of this Congress and come back in January, we are going to have a host of new friends in Congress that, you know, have not had any sort of conversations about Farm Bill. I think as it stands now, we have over 150 members in the House that weren't here when we wrote the last Farm Bill, and with the retirements and the election around the corner, we have a lot of education to do. So I do think it can be done. We recognize that there may be some different political headwinds ahead of us and different thought patterns when it comes to spending when we come back next year. But we are really optimistic that with all the needs on the table that are affecting not only farmers or ranchers, but consumers across the country, you know, this is a food and farm bill that is critical to get done right. And we're hopeful that we can work with Congress to do just that.
We'll be right back to discuss the DC ag community's approach to the upcoming farm bill right after this.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Welcome back. Competing priorities can sometimes lead to conflict among the nation's farm groups as deliberations take place on the Farm Bill. But NCFC's Lisa Van Dorn says going into the 2023 legislation, a coalition is building.
You know, NCFC's in a unique position. We often don't get into the weeds on, you know, what a specific commodity program might look like. So we are able to take that step back and look at that 30,000 foot level. And at this point, I think everybody's still trying to assess and maybe be a little bit nimble, given both the political turmoil as well as geopolitical turmoil, you know, issues like Ukraine and others that are affecting our ag markets, and try to figure out how best to navigate a path forward. Every farm bill takes its own unique path. I don't think this one will be any different. At this point, it's hard to see the end of that path and when that ending date happens. But, you know, I think ag groups are trying to coalesce and come together and figure out positions and understand where other groups are coming from so that we can present a united front to Congress to make it maybe a little bit easier.
Mm-hmm. And Jonathan, as we talk about some of the various spending priorities, the different ag groups, different lawmakers, perhaps the Biden administration coming into the fold here as well, all of these different entities are going to have priorities with that limited pot of money that we've discussed. Wonder, from an observational standpoint, what are you watching for to determine the priorities that different groups are going to have, different lawmakers will have, and ultimately, which of those priorities will end up receiving funding?
Yeah, and so one of the things that and particularly sort of geeking out a bit in the academic space, that makes a farm bill so fascinating to just watch and study is how it demonstrates the coalitional building, maintenance, and effort to go on. You've got to have this multi-part set of interests: farm interests, conservation, environmental interests, the low-income food interests, research, rural development, and so forth. And so what you watch for are the pressure points, sort of where that coalition builds. And so the most obvious one that we've seen the last two farm bills is if we have this partisan attack on the SNAP program, it tears apart the coalition and it complicates the ability to get a bill through. And then that just sort of unravels everything from there. So I think one of the big things we watch for, again, with this budget constriction and pressure around it, is what is the health of this coalition? How well is everybody getting along, not just within the farm groups, but within the farm groups, the nutrition and food aid and so forth. And so to me, that's kind of like the big indicator of the functional capability of the coalition to get its votes in Congress to move through two chambers, conference, both committees and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's not just the financial fact of the matter. Sometimes the political fact of the matter will enter in, because you see something like a potential rewrite of the Thrifty Food Plan would obviously be an avenue to reduce benefits. But Jonathan, wouldn't that be an extremely risky political maneuver to attempt, you know, something like reducing the benefits of the SNAP program?
I mean, we have the last two farm bills in the House to show just how problematic that gets. Both of them were defeated on the House floor once and had to be sort of rescued back in the process. So I think anytime we see this very partisan focus on cutting SNAP, changing benefits, removing people from the program, all of that just ignites a series of partisan and political problems in the chambers that complicate the coalition building you need to get the votes to get the bill across the floor.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Ryan, as we look at this next piece of legislation as well, we've seen the last couple of farm bills had some, you know, fairly significant policy changes involved. They all, some of them kind of build themselves as a evolutionary rather than revolutionary, but some revolutionary inclusion even in that 2018 Farm Bill. As you kind of sit back and assess the needs of your members, the desires of the agricultural community, and frankly, the political will of Congress, is this shaping up to be one of those evolutionary bills, or are there some revolutionary policy ideas on the floor?
Well, I think everything's on the table at this point, but I think looking back over the last few years, we're living in interesting times. I think the American public has really become more aware of the need for food security and how important the food supply system is in America. And, you know, and I think even beyond that, I think the bottom line is, you know, I think most consumers recognize that the agricultural sector is important. It is a huge part of the economy, more than 43 million jobs, over $3 trillion to the U.S. economy. So again, as we work with consumers, as we work with members of Congress moving forward to craft the next farm bill, you know, one, there are a variety of different interests in this bill. I think we'll see some consistency as we move from farm bill to farm bill. But I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, all of the lessons learned over the last couple of years coming through COVID, looking at the supply chain challenges that we've faced, you know, those conversations will influence the outcome of this bill. But again, I think The Farm Bill does matter to all Americans, and to the extent that we can maintain that unity as we move forward, from the risk management side to crop insurance to conservation and food security, I think all of those components are going to be critically important to do together to keep that coalition strong. Mm-hmm.
So great discussion here today about the priorities, the spending of the 2023 potentially Farm Bill. Maybe the next time we all get together, we can talk about the timeline of it and we can all take bets on when exactly that legislation heads to the president's desk. But for now, I think we're going to wrap it up with the conversation we've had here today. So Lisa, Jonathan, Ryan, thanks for joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, Hannah Pagel takes a look at corn maturity across the country in this week's Map It Out.
According to USDA's most recent weekly crop progress report, this year's corn crop is behind in maturity. What does that mean? It means farmers' crops could be stunted and not produce as many bushels as previous years, further driving up consumer cost. Field corn is an ingredient found in more than 4,000 grocery store items like shampoo, toothpaste, chewing gum, marshmallows, crayons, and paper. Corn is also an important feedstock for livestock and renewable energy. If this year's corn crop is delayed, it could increase the demand for the product, with consumers possibly footing the bill. In the report, USDA took the top 18 corn-producing states, which accounted for 92% of the planted acres in 2021, and reported the percent of corn that has hit the silking stage, which is a growth stage for the crop. For the week ending July 10th, 15% of the national corn crop is silking, but that's behind the five-year average of 25%. This map shows the difference between the current silking of a state's corn crop compared to the state's five-year average. So far, North Dakota and Colorado are the only states ahead of the five-year averages. Both states have 10% of their corn crop in the silking stage. This puts their crop ahead of Iowa, Minnesota, South Dakota, Nebraska, and Ohio. Iowa is behind its five-year average by 14%, Minnesota by 9%, Indiana by 10%, and Illinois down 25%. USDA says none of the crop in South Dakota has begun to silk. For this week's Map It Out, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at AgriPulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the week to come. Regenerative agriculture will be in an unfamiliar room on Tuesday as the House Oversight Committee is planning to hold a hearing on agriculture's role in addressing climate change. The Senate Ag Appropriations Subcommittee plans to take a close look at the budget request for the Food and Drug Administration in a Wednesday hearing. As always, keep an eye on AgriPulse.com for the latest farm policy news in Washington and across the country. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one. Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit agripulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.